Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Governor Jerry Brown's plan to boost state funding for students who could use the extra support has received mixed reaction from educators, largely based on whether they stand to gain or lose. But it's not just relatively better off suburban districts that stand to lose out from the redistribution of wealth. Brown's plan would eliminate foster youth services. Emotional testimony is expected today in Sacramento at a state Senate budget hearing. Peter John Shuler reports.
Advocates worry the loss of the $15 million program will hurt the 42,000 children in the state's foster care system. Amy Lemley is policy director at the John Burton Foundation. She says the program provides academic support and counseling for foster care students who frequently change schools when they change homes.
It's hard to believe, but this is really the only program in the state that specifically addresses the educational needs of children and youth in foster care.
In San Diego County, Michelle Lustig coordinates foster youth services. She says money will still come to the county to support students in foster care, but it will be up to the County Office of Education to figure out how to coordinate with the various districts to create a uniform structure of support.
These are the state's children, and we can't forget that. They don't have parents that are going to be ensuring that their needs are being monitored in terms of their education unless there are professionals who are working diligently on that.
Exceptions to the governor's new education funding plan have been made for special education and Native American programs. Some speakers at today's hearing will argue the same should be done for foster youth. For the California Report, I'm Peter John Shuler.
There were 32 prison suicides in California last year. A report out today from the LA Times digs into court records to find a suppressed report warning the way prison officials try to prevent suicides actually encourages it. The report by an outside consultant in 2011 argues holding suicidal inmates in dim, dirty cells wearing a safety smock made it more likely they would say they were feeling better just to get out and then kill themselves. Today, the city of Los Angeles is expected to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a lower court ruling preventing the random seizure and destruction of homeless people's belongings. L.A. has been conducting a campaign to clean up downtown Skid Row as the streets around it gentrify. Last fall, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled belongings may be taken only if they pose an immediate threat to public health or constitute evidence of a crime. L.A.'s city attorney says it is a matter of public health, pointing to the ongoing outbreak of tuberculosis, which has infected nearly 80 people and killed 11. Other cities will be watching closely. Fresno, for instance, faces more than 30 lawsuits over its efforts to clean up homeless encampments. The Federal Housing and Urban Development Agency requires what's called a point-in-time count to determine what to spend where on services for the homeless. This year, there's a special focus on youth, as Alice Daniel reports from Fresno.
Joe Martinez stands in a commercial district of Fresno, clipboard in hand, ready to count any 18 to 24-year-olds who look like they might be homeless. He spots two kids near a dumpster behind a bakery.
So I'm marking off busy street. I'm saying youth 18 to 24 for both of them. Okay, one was a male, one is a female.
He keeps a tally on a form that lists various ways of identifying homeless kids.
Basically, they want to know, well, how do I know they're homeless? Is it because there's an abandoned vehicle, self-identified, begging with homeless sign, cardboard house, dirty clothing is what I'm marking off?
Martinez is an outreach coordinator for a homeless youth sanctuary in Fresno. In the past few years, he's seen an increase in homeless kids and believes it has to do with the bad economy and fractured families. He says the federal government wants a sample count of homeless youth this year because no one knows just how many there are.
They're most likely to be staying in a place not fit for human habitation. They're sleeping in a park. They're sleeping in an abandoned building. They're sleeping in a vehicle.
Martinez walks along the sidewalk with three other volunteers. Behind some businesses, they meet two kids in their early 20s sitting against a brick wall.
Please, for snacks, corn.
An offer of snacks elicits enthusiasm.
Goody, gumdrops, thank you.
What about a granola bar? We got a granola
bar.
Oh,
those are good.
The pair are in tattered and dirty clothing, their long fingernails packed with dirt. They tell the volunteers their names are Serena and Kirk, and they agree to answer some survey questions.
Have you ever been taken to the hospital against your will?
No.
Have you ever been cheated for drugs?
Kirk, have you ever been the victim of a violent attack?
No, thank goodness.
Their few belongings, a sleeping bag, some clothing, and a sickly dog that has adopted them, are nearby. They say they sleep behind businesses or squat in abandoned houses.
Have you guys stayed in the shelter?
Zero times.
Zero?
That doesn't sound like fun.
No?
Martinez asked Kirk if he's ever abused alcohol or drugs.
I've drank away my sorrows from time to time.
Okay.
They say they work in a nearby national park and were planning to travel widely. But then they got in trouble for having pot in their car. They lost their jobs, and the car broke down.
And now we're on the streets. But we were sleeping in our car, and that was cool. We
had Serena and Kirk don't consider themselves homeless. They're just travelers encountering a bout of bad luck. Stories like this are not uncommon, says Peggy Sung, who volunteers at the Homeless Youth Sanctuary.
For our notes, it is homeless if you don't have a roof over your head that night.
For some of the younger volunteers, the youth homeless count was a bit jarring. Karen Jimenez is a college student.
It makes me think that, you know, I should actually pay a little bit more attention to my surroundings and people who need help because, you know, they didn't all want to be where they're at and they actually have, like, the same goals that I want to do because I want to travel as well, you know?
At one point, the volunteers try to engage a group of homeless kids standing around in a vacant lot.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
No, we don't like interviews.
The kids don't want to be interviewed, and Joe Martinez is not surprised. Someone in the group is probably scared to speak up.
This person doesn't trust anyone who represents authority or maybe any kind of government agency.
Before the team leaves the area, two volunteers go back to where Kirk was sitting to give him a pair of clean socks. But they're too late.
How did that go, Fonzo?
Oh, they were gone already.
They left.
This year, the teams counted 130 homeless youth in Fresno. But Martinez says there are probably hundreds more young people on the streets that they didn't find. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in Fresno.
That's the California Report for Thursday, February 28th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, celebrating the 2013 recipients of the James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. More information is available at www.irvine.org. Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as data storage, compression, and disaster recovery. Barracuda.com.